It's time for the Hockey Writers Grindline, a weekly show covering everything Detroit Red Wings. Brought to you by our own iconic top line of Wings writers. Sit back and enjoy the grind.
Welcome to the Hockey Writers Grindline. I am your host, Pat Brown, and joining me as always, my line mates, Devin Little and Kyle Knopp. And boy, are we glad to have you back, especially after an extended holiday break. But stop the presses, guys, because boy, do we have a big surprise for all of our viewers. And we are thrilled to be joined by former longtime NHL referee, Tim Peel. Tim, cannot thank you enough for taking some time to come on our humble little show and sit on the hot seat. How you doing?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely thrilled. So we will dive right in. We've got some questions right off the bat. And so we're going to just forge right ahead. So let's start. We've got a lot of questions on, and this is kind of the elephant in the room, I suppose, right? That fabled Nashville Detroit game. And in terms of the hot mic and, you know, what you were ultimately on mic saying. So the question for you in terms of, it came out, it was a big hullabaloo, and for our viewers at home who may not be familiar, Tim indicated he wanted to call a penalty on Nashville, if you will, and I'm paraphrasing, so Tim, you can keep me honest here, but just curious, right out of the gate, was anything taken out of context there? How did that whole thing go down, and your feelings towards it?
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that we need to address that first. It was a game March 23rd in Nashville. I was retiring literally 4 weeks later, April 24th in St. Louis was going to be my final game. The St. Louis Blues are a tremendous organization. They had tickets made up, Tim Peel's final game. I had 150, 160 people coming to the game. And just to give you a little backstory, prior to that game, it was going to be the last time I was going to see Nashville play. And they have a longtime equipment manager, Pete Rogers, who I got to know when he was the equipment manager in Rochester back to our American League days. So I'd known Pete for 25, 26 years. And the equipment managers take a tremendous amount of care of the officials, from washing our laundry to sharpening our skates to fit the equipment repairs, et cetera. And we just became good friends. So that afternoon I went out and bought a nice bottle of wine, and actually it was a bottle of Caymus. So it was $100 bottle of wine. And before the game, I took it down to the dressing room and, you know, hugged Pete and thanked him for everything. And Todd Richards, the assistant coach, for Nashville was in the room, and Richie and I and Pete sat there for half an hour, 40 minutes, and the time just went by, and we were just talking about my daughter horseback rides, and we were talking about hockey and kids and everything really other than the NHL. And so the reason I tell that story is because it certainly wasn't my intent to go and get Nashville. And
sure.
I think everybody understands you don't referee for 23 years and do the Olympics and playoffs every year if you have a reputation that you're going to go out and get a team. Mm-hmm. So that night when I called the penalty, I was working with a longtime referee, Kelly Sutherland, who, you know, him and Wes McCauley are probably our top two officials in the NHL. And I called a penalty on Victor Arvidsson for tripping a Detroit player. And at the time, I honestly thought that he had tripped him. I thought he kicked his feet out. And as I'm going to the box, I see the replay. And then we have a TV timeout. And I think it was me, more or less, I was embarrassed by the call because I, you know, first of all, Kelly and I were great friends and had worked a lot of big games together. Mm-hmm. And we had gone to the Olympics together. I had worked a bronze medal game. He had worked a gold medal game in Russia. And so it was kind of me, my defense mechanism going, yeah, it wasn't much, but I want to get a penalty, you know, even though I knew it was a shitty call. Mm-hmm. And instead of just saying, that was a bad call. And I tried to justify it to myself and say, I wasn't much, but I wanted to get a penalty against Nashville.
Yeah.
And certainly that was not my intent. You know, the entire game, Nashville won the game. We called two penalties against Nashville the entire game, you know, one other penalty the rest of the game. That was in the first period. So it's important to tell that because it wasn't my intent. My verbiage just came out wrong. And so the game went along fine. Nobody had said anything. And then after the game, we have a strict policy that we're not to have our cell phones on in the dressing room. And, and all of a sudden I look and my phone's vibrating and I look at Stephen Walken, our director of officiating, and he goes, we got a big problem. And I didn't even know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
So he then went on to tell me, you know, he sent me the clip and went on to tell me. And so I hung up the phone and I said to the three other officials in the room, I go, I may get fired tonight. And this is serious. And so I went back to the hotel. Before I went back to the hotel, as soon as I had a shower, I went right down and spoke to David Poyle and asked to speak to John Hines and explained to them that was not my intent. That's not what I meant. And they could tell that I was visibly upset and accepted my apology. So then I got back to the hotel room and you know, was on the phone quite a bit with Wes McCauley, who's the president of our association. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. And so I went to bed and obviously probably didn't sleep a lot, but I got up in the morning. Right. I knew I had been taken off the game two nights later in Dallas. So I booked a ticket home to St. Louis and I was at the airport at 7:30 in the morning and Stephen Walken called and said, his exact words were, you've worked your last game in the National Hockey League. So it's not funny, but at the time I knew the decision was made and I said, okay. I said, I got to let you go. I got to get on a flight. I didn't grovel. I didn't say, oh no, don't do it. Sure. Let me talk to Gary and Bill Daly. And I knew the decision was made. I said, okay, I got to let you go. So I got on the plane and flew home. And I still hadn't told my wife because I didn't know what was going to happen in the evening prior. I didn't know. I didn't want to get her upset because I didn't know if anything was going to come of this. Sure. So I get home and unfortunately, because of social media, she had already found out.
Friends
texting her and calling her, how's Tim doing? How are you doing? And, you know, it was, you know, it became a big deal. It was on the Golf Channel, you know, hockey's
right.
On the Golf Channel. It was on every right. sports show in the world. It was on Fox. It was on CNN. It was obviously national headlines in Canada. And, so I was surviving. I was kind of in a zone and, you know, I don't want to name drop, but I am going to name drop because it helped. You know, I land in St. Louis and I've got text messages and phone calls from Wayne Gretzky and Brian Burke and Lou Lamoriello and John Tortorella and Dallas Eakins and Daryl Sutter and just every coach and GM and presidents of clubs reaching out to me. I didn't know that I was that well liked by those people. And it meant a lot to me. And so I told this story a few times. I hope it won't bore your listeners, but
I assure you, you're not.
There was a player in the NHL. You guys remember David Clarkson. And David Clarkson played for Columbus, Jersey, Toronto. One other team, he played for four teams, and he hated referees. We did not get along. He didn't like any of the refs. And so I get a phone call as I'm driving home from the airport, and it's a Columbus number, and I don't know who it is. And so I answered the phone, and it's David Clarkson. And for a split second, when he said, hey, it's David Clarkson, I thought he was going to say, hey, it looks good on you. You know, I didn't like you. And he goes, I just want you to know I'm retired. I live in Denver now. I was just playing with some ex-players. And I just want to tell you that we think that this is a travesty. What has happened?
Sure.
And he goes, I know I was difficult to get along with. But he says, I just want to tell you this, Tim. He says, when we had you, the players in the room, myself included, we knew we had one of the fairest refs and one of the best refs in the league. And I said, David, you know, thank you very much for reaching out, because it's easy for your friends to call. And
of course.
But for people that I didn't even think liked me to call, it meant a lot. And so I get home, and obviously my wife's crying. She's upset. And I'm kind of like, kind of in a mode. And the phone calls are coming in. And you know, the only thing that, and still the only thing to this day that bothers me is that my kids, my son Bronson is 9. Jamal Mayer is the ex-player. Him and I coached the select team in St. Louis, and his son and my son play on it. And my daughter, 7, she'll be 8 in January. And it bothered me that they weren't going to be able to see their dad referee his last game.
Yeah, sure.
So when they came home from school, well, before they came home from school, around 3:30, at around 1:30, 2 o'clock, I got a phone call. Kelly Chase, the ex-player, and him and I are best friends here in St. Louis. And, and Chaser called me, and I had talked to him earlier in the morning about my incident. And he called me, and he goes, I've got some terrible news to tell you. And he goes, I hate to tell you on a day like today, but he goes, Bobby Plager just got killed in a car accident. Mm-hmm. Bobby Plager was a legend in St. Louis, and somebody that I loved and I'd known for 20 years since I moved to St. Louis. And my kids loved him, and he was always so nice to them. So when I saw my kids, you know, I broke down. I'm on my knees, I'm hugging them, and I'm like, you know, I was crying. And then I had to tell them that Bobby died. So a bit of it was I was crying because of what happened to me, but then what happened to Bobby. And
of course.
And so it was funny though, because Chaser calls me up at 1:30, and he says, he goes, PLZ goes, Bobby, because Twitter is obviously going crazy and saying,
yeah, right,
well, around the world.
Yeah. Right, everywhere.
Everywhere. And Chaser calls, he goes, Bobby loved you so much, he thought he'd take the heat off you today. Because all of a sudden, Twitter in St. Louis went to Bobby Plager. You
know? Yeah.
And I'm driving. So my daughter's a big horseback rider. So I'm driving her to the stables that afternoon. And you know, she's 7.5 years old. And I never said, you know, and Tisha never said, you know, your dad got fired. But I think they can kind of tell how upset I was. And she goes, Dad, can I ask you a question? I said, yeah, baby bro, you know, whatever. And she goes, can you tell people that you weren't fired by the NHL? And it's like, you know, coming from a little girl, right?
Yeah. So,
but the whole time during this, like, Quenville called me, you know, a lot of good people called me. Jeremy Roenick, you know, he got kicked to the curb by NBC, and Mike Milbury called me. He got kicked to the curb for saying the wrong thing. And
yeah,
a lot of people were, I understand why the league had to do what they did. Mm-hmm. Now, if I had 2 or 3 years left in the league, do I think it might've been handled differently? I do. I think
sure.
Suspended for a couple of weeks, a month, whatever. Because you don't survive for 23 years and consistently work playoffs if you have a reputation that now is portrayed that that's how I officiated, which was
right.
The opposite. But they all said to me, they go, you know what, you'll survive, you'll be fine. And about 2 weeks into it, my wife, Tisha, she said to me, she goes, you're like really good about, like, everything's good. You're like happy. I go, babe, I was left in an adoption agency, an orphanage. I go, I grew up in a trailer park in New Brunswick. I go, my adopted mom died of cancer at 50. I've been through a lot of shit in my life. Mm-hmm. And I go, I've always had, you know, an outlook of perseverance and resiliency. And I said, and I have an example to set for Bronson and Brielle that you're going to get kicked in the balls once in a while in life, and it's how you come out on the other end. And I have this referee school in St. Louis. We do it every June. And I brought in Joe Vitale. Joe played in the NHL. He's from St. Louis. and does the radio now, and Justin mm-hmm. Chibi worked for the Blues, and he's a tremendous human being, just an awesome person. So I brought him in the opening night. The year before, I brought in Cam Jansen to pump him up, and this year I brought in Joe, and I didn't want the opening to be about me and what happened to me. I wanted it to be positive. So it was day two or day three, and one of the kids gave me a shot about Victor Arvidsson, and because we were showing video clips and so on and plays. And so finally I said, I looked at the classroom, there's 40 kids. I go, do you want to hear the story? And they go, I go, okay, this is the story. So I said to them, I go, listen, you know, these kids are 14 to 21 years old. I go, life's pretty good right now. Mom and dad, you're in high school, probably got a girlfriend. You know, mom and dad bought you a car. Life's pretty good. But I go, guess what? Life's going to suck sometimes.
Yeah.
And you're going to get kicked in the balls.
Yeah. But
how you come out on the other end of it and how you persevere. And I had a party at my house a couple weeks later, and there was, you know, 20, 30 people at the house. And right in front of everybody, this, I kind of addressed it, what happened, because nobody wanted to talk about it. And mm-hmm. I said, hey, we're here. We're going to have a great party. We're going to have fun. I'm good. And this one guy, Andy Kaiser, he actually chokes me up because he goes, right in front of everybody, he goes, we're your friend because of the type of person you are. We're not your friend because you're an NHL ref. We don't care if you were a garbage man. Like, we don't care. We don't care what happened to you and so on. And I knew I was going to be okay. And I was actually excited about, you know, you guys know I'm, you know, starting to get involved in media and so on. And, mm-hmm. and that was kind of my plan 2 or 3 years before, was I wanted to get involved in media. And I always really liked that part of it. I became friends with a lot of media people on the road and still are good friends with them. And so I was looking forward to the next chapter in my life. And quite honestly, the last 2 years, you know, I obviously liked refereeing the games, but my son Bronson is 9. I'm watching games on Live Barn from LA and Vegas, mm-hmm. Vancouver, and my daughter's at horse shows, and I'm missing out on so much.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? They need their dad home. So I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason.
Sure.
And I think that if you're a good person, you treat people right, that in the long run, everything will, my wife always jokes with me. She goes, yeah, you know, I always say, everything's going to work out. And so that's kind of how I led my life. But I hope I didn't ramble on too much.
No, it was great stuff. I think the first thing to call attention to is, remember, this particular podcast is a Red Wings podcast. So nobody watching or here disagreed with the call, to be clear.
Yeah, no.
we're all like, yeah. We wanted an early one against Arvidsson too.
And what's funny is Darren Pang, one of my closest friends,
yeah,
he actually was at Steve Yzerman's house that night watching the game.
Yeah.
And Steve looked at Pang and goes, yeah, I don't think that was a good call. And then all of a sudden, Steve and I kind of talked about it very briefly this summer. I went up to visit Panger up at Duck Lake in Michigan. I don't know if you guys know where Duck Lake is. And Wayne Pressly, the ex-player, Joey Kosher, they both have a place on Duck Lake. But anyway, Kenny Holland is a member at Oakland Hills.
Yep.
And he invited Panger and I out, and the foursome was, you know, I'm a kid from New Brunswick that grew up in a town of 1,000 people in a trailer park, and mm-hmm. I'm playing golf in September with Kenny Holland, Yzerman, Panger, and myself at Oakland Hills. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, so Yeah, it's I love Detroit. I loved working there. I love the old Joe Louis. You know, I come out there for playoff games and they'd be waving the white towels and Al
Sobotka.
Al Sobotka.
Yeah.
I come out the last few years, we'd hug each other. I'd go, hey Al, good to see you. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. I loved working there. And then Karen would sing the national anthem. I'm in Detroit, man. This is pretty awesome.
Can I interject right there? Because that gives me a question I really want to ask. As a referee, how do you feel about the octopus or other items being thrown on the ice?
Yeah.
You love it? Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like in the middle of a game, like I can see you just getting frustrated about that. Right. You know, like
I never picked them up. I always said that because the referees get paid more than the linesmen. So I'd always look at the lines and go, you can go pick that up.
What about the rats in Florida? Did that become a little overwhelming as opposed to the
actual? No, you know what? It was funny because I grabbed a couple years ago. It was 3-4 years ago. I grabbed a couple and I brought them home. And
that's awesome.
Kids played with them for weeks. Yeah. I love those sort of things. Those sort of things are good for our sport, right?
Yeah.
I agree.
It's good. It's like, you know, and then of course, you know, well, if you throw any more rats on the ice, you're going to get a delay a game penalty. It's
right.
Like, I get it. We can't delay the game, but geez, the fans loved it. The players loved it. It was fantastic. And Scott Mellenby, who's one of my closest friends, he is the one that started the whole
rat trick.
You know, you know, he killed the rat with his
scored two goals.
That's the great thing about our sport, right?
Like, yeah.
You can't make that stuff up.
You gotta love it. And it wasn't a disco demolition night like they had at Comiskey way back then. So, right. You know. So let's talk about at least a little bit the current state of officiating, or at least some things that have come out with Connor McDavid lately, who both he and his agent kind of recently called out officiating, indicated kind of among other things that refs aren't calling enough penalties. Do you see a problem with how the league's officiated right now?
Not the league, but you have a very valid question with Connor. When I was on Daily Faceoff with Frank Cervelli a couple of weeks ago, and Connor McDavid was 135th out of the entire league for penalties called on him. Now, that's pretty low considering he's the best player in the league.
Sure.
And we showed four clips, and three of them I said are tripping penalties, and one of them I said is a good non-call by the officials. I always, not that we should never give the star players preferential treatment. We should always obviously treat them the same. But let's be honest, at the end of the day, people are there to see, when I came in the league, people are there to see Mario Lemieux, Sidney Crosby, Alexander Ovechkin. So if there's an opportunity where there's a penalty that's called against a star player, our officials need to be ready to recognize that and call it. And I understand, you know, John Tortorella, who I love a lot, you know, he made a comment that Connor McDavid just needs to shut up. And I disagree with that. And because I think Connor was in the league 3-4 years before I retired. I don't know if Connor McDavid ever said a word to me. Even when he got fouled and there wasn't a penalty called, he never said anything. He just, he's all business. He's very respectful of the officials, and he's just out there to play. Somebody asked me, they said, is he too fast for the officials? I said, not a chance. But I would think as a referee and as a crew, because when we're in the dressing room before the game, we go through the lineups and we talk about, you know, certain players, not every player. But I would think that our officials would say, hey, if there's a trip or a hook on Connor McDavid in the first period, we better get it. Let's not miss it, because then we're setting the standard going forward for the rest of the game.
Right.
You guys put your stick on his hands, you trip him, you're going to get a penalty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has drawn more penalties in the last couple of weeks, which is good. But our guys certainly aren't going out there going, I'm not calling any penalties against
him. Sure.
That's a death wish. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, And I'm sure Kenny Holland has talked to Steven and has showed him the clips that I saw and said, can you explain to me why these aren't penalties? So, but it's, you know, on another note, it's, I took Bronson, my son, down to watch him play in St. Louis a couple of weeks ago because I wanted, he had never seen him up close before. And he's like, everyone's blown away by this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's incredible.
You know? Yeah.
So it's fun. You know, I told this story the other day that it was 2-3 years ago. I think we were in Tampa and he was coming down the wing. And, you know, I'm 55 now. At the time I was 52, 53. And, you know, I'm skating backwards, which obviously you can't skate as fast backwards as you can forwards. And I felt like I was one of those turnstiles that coming by me, right? Like
just doing the like pirouette as it goes by.
Right.
Oh, that's good. And you know, I had to see him and Draisaitl, they were here in Arizona a few weeks ago, and it's almost not fair.
I know.
It's almost not fair. It's pretty crazy.
Every time they're on the ice, you're like, they may score.
Yeah,
they
may for sure.
Every time they're on the ice. And I can't think, you know, I was in the league 23 years. I cannot think of too many players that you could say that about.
Absolutely.
For every time they're on the ice.
You know, what it reminded me of, and I don't mean to go on a tangent, although that is kind of our MO on this show. way back when, so sitting watching McDavid, and this is in Arizona, and it was a good amount of Coyotes fans in the stands. And when anytime McDavid touched the puck, there was a roar with the crowd. Right. Anytime, the last time I saw that was probably Sergei Fedorov.
Right.
To be honest, it just seemed like anytime Fedorov had the puck back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it rode home wherever it would be electric, and you
were the fans of the opposing team.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
they're excited to see him. It's so good for our sport, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It was cool stuff. So, all right, let's take a quick timeout. Thank you at home for watching the show. Give us a like, subscribe to the Hockey Writers channel. We've got so much good stuff on here. We've got Blackhawks banter, Sabres scoop, Chicks and Sticks. Our newest show, Howlers and Growlers. You might recognize the attire, by the way, is my uniform. I'm wearing my away uniform today.
You're away. You lost the bet.
I lost the bet between the two shows that I host.
I think they have a St. Louis Cardinal hat on.
We should have.
Next time you come on, Tim. Next time you come on, I'll do that. follow us on Twitter. Follow Tim on Twitter at Tim C Peel 20. Sign up for our morning newsletter, Morning Skate. You all know the drill. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Spotify. Any way you want to get your news, we'll bring it to you. If you need us to put on our linesman gear so we can tell you how many times Andres Lilia iced the puck during a Red Wings power play, we can do that. So thanks again for watching. We appreciate it. Cow. We do this for you at home. And I think I set a new record with making Devin laugh. So I like it. All right. Speaking of which, Devin, you're on the clock now. The next question is yours. And by the way, for those of you at home, because it probably looks really weird watching it, if you're watching it, apologies for my camera. I clicked a button and didn't realize I turned my camera off. So I don't know how long my camera was off.
Can't hide but, forever, Pat.
Apologies for that. So Devin, I need a break. Take it away.
Well, I want to start by saying that Kyle's fantasy team definitely loves Connor McDavid. So
yes. First pick.
Tim, the question I want to ask is, what is, I guess, is there a difference? And then what is it between officiating like a standard regular season game and then officiating like an all-star game, an outdoor game, or even like an international game?
No, that's a good question. All-star games are easy to officiate. You know, I did one in Ottawa. It was Eric Furlott and I, and that was in Ottawa in 2012. And, you know, it's more of a just, you know, you go out and have fun and enjoy yourself. I did two Winter Classics. I did one in Wrigley in 2009, which was a thrill. That was Detroit and Chicago. And then the second one I did was in St. Louis with Chicago and St. Louis, 2015.
Yeah, I think it was 15. Yeah.
15, yeah. And I remember going into that game, you know, this is a national game. It's across the country. It's across the country in Canada. You don't want to, you never want to make a weak call, but every referee that, you know, whether it was Don Kuharski, Andy Van Helleman, Kerry Frazier, some of the all-time greats, there's going to be a time you make a call that you're like, ah, geez, it wasn't really a good call. And sure enough, we always talk of officiating that, sure enough, the hockey gods that the team scores on the power play.
Yep.
You know, and and I've had many of those over 23 years where you're like, please throw off the penalty. Please throw off the penalty. And so I went into that game going, I do not want to be noticed. I don't want to, I just want to get out of here. I want to call, we want a good game. And I think it was Tarasenko or somebody scored an empty net goal and the game, you know, there's a minute left, 45 seconds left. And so the game had been, it was over. And I remember this wave of emotion came over me because I've got, you know, it's my adopted hometown. I've lived here for 20 years. So I have a tremendous amount of friends here and all my family's at the game. And the last thing that Tim Peel wants is to call a shitty penalty against Chicago or St. Louis.
Sure.
And turn in the game. And this wave of emotion came over me. It was like, oh my God, like everything went good. Nobody's talking about the officiating. And people think that we don't, like, I remember a few years ago, I had a, before we brought in video review, I had a play in Madison Square Garden, and I missed a goalie interference, and it was back then before we could challenge it and so on. And it was against the Rangers, and the Rangers lost the game, and Henrik Lundqvist was you know, upset and pissed at me, and people just think we go back to the hotel and have a bunch of beers and don't worry about the game, but that's not at all. Like we have supervisors at the games that come down and talk to us about good things, bad things we did and so on. But we don't even need, at my point in my career, I didn't need a supervisor there because I could look at myself in the mirror and go, you didn't have a very good game tonight.
Sure.
You weren't with it. That wasn't a National Hockey League referee game. And so I left that game and I was upset I had a pit in my stomach for 3 or 4 days because I knew I had got the call wrong. And fans think like, they don't care. But we do care. Like our officials,
of course.
Like there's a lot of pride, you know, there's a lot of pride. Plus there's a lot of pride because if you have a good year, you get selected for the playoffs, which get bonus money, and all of our guys, you take away, I could have been paid half the bonus money that they paid me in for each round, but I still would have worked the playoffs.
Of course.
It's the best feeling in the world. It was it's the playoffs. It's the most intense hockey you've ever seen. You have guys in the playoffs that don't throw a check for 82 games that are finishing the checks in the playoffs. Like it's unbelievable how these athletes can bring their game up 2, 3, 4 notches. It's remarkable.
Yep. And really quick for the viewers at home, quick anecdote for me, it is hard to make a call. It's really easy. It's really easy to blame the refs, but I got to tell you, this was almost 20 years ago. My cousin was like 8 years old. And my uncle asked me to referee his like Y ball basketball league, a bunch of 8 year olds running around. Right. I know the rules of basketball quite well. I've played my whole life. They had to pull me aside like halfway through the second quarter because I hadn't made a single call. I hadn't blown the whistle. And we're talking kids are taking 10 steps with the ball, right? I was legit at that level, nervous and scared to make a call. Now, I was 18, but still, it is difficult. You've got to be, even if you're wrong, like you've got to be sure that that's the call and you've got to make it.
You know what, Pat, that's actually a good thing you brought up because I'm sure you guys have read it on social media and different reports over the last few months where there's a shortage of referees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Massachusetts, they're having a big problem.
Maryland.
St. Louis, they're having problems. Games that are supposed to be 3-man, they've only got 2 guys out there. because I don't know why officiating at the NHL level has been a lightning rod for as long as I've been around.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to talk about the officials more so than football, basketball, baseball. Hockey, for whatever reason, brings out, especially with minor hockey parents, brings out the
worst. Yeah.
You know, I saw a lady go on the ice the other day on social media and Twitter and berating, she was a mother, and she was berating the refs. And I'm looking at this going, what is wrong with you? First of all, what kind of example are you setting for your kid? And it's unbelievable. So to your point, though, I wish these parents could actually referee a game and then appreciate how difficult it is to do.
Yep.
And it goes back to the NHL where it's easy for us to sit at home, and I do it. You know,
we all do it. Of course. Of course.
I'm sitting there with my wife.
Human nature, right?
Yeah. I'm sitting there with my wife and we're watching the Blues game or the Red Wings game or whoever. And I go, oh, that was not a good call. But I got a glass of wine in my hand. But it's easy for us to
sit
there, look at the replay, slow it down. But when you're out there, and Stephen Walken, our director of officiating, has this great phrase. He goes, we are officiating in real time.
Yeah.
We aren't slowing it down. We're officiating in real time. And you'll see a player. And
you don't have a bird's eye view either. Right. While
that's
watching.
The other thing.
Yeah.
That's the other, you know what? That's another good
Your
point.
Your view's obstructed.
I said that the other day. I go, it's easy to officiate from up here.
Yeah.
But that's not how you're officiating. You're officiating down here. You got 3, 4, 5 bodies in front of you. You got pucks flying around. You got six flying around. And you've got to make a decision in a tenth of a second. Yeah. And, you know, I truly, not because I was one, but I think it's the toughest sport to officiate.
Oh, absolutely.
And I wish people would give these guys, we've seen it when Olympics and World Juniors, you see some of the European officials, they're not that good. Yeah. Our officials are the best officials in the world. Are they going to make mistakes? Absolutely. They're going to, but overall they do a tremendous job.
I'm glad I don't have that many people watching me while I'm doing my job. Let me tell you. Sorry, Kyle. Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, I do have a quick follow-up for that, actually, because I coach a U14 girls team out here in Maryland, and we've been having issue with, ref shortages as well. And we've had a few games where we've had refs that were reffing up levels that they probably shouldn't quite be at yet. Luckily, one of my team manager, he is a ref as well. So he gets it. And we have a lot of talks about this as well. But he actually wanted me to ask you, do you have a go-to that kind of shuts down those parents or those coaches in their tracks and kind of like, you know, makes them sit and like, okay, I should probably shut up now. Like, do you have a go-to that you could give to some of those parents or coaches those refs to put up with those parents or coaches?
Well,
sorry to put you on the spot like that.
No, not at all. It's a good question because the select team that Coach Jamal Mayers and I coach, we're on this group chat, group me or whatever it's called. And we lost a game the other day, and one of the dads, and it happened to be his son that was on defense, that got scored on. It was a 3-on-1. The play was offside, and it literally was offside by this much.
Okay, yeah.
In a 2-referee system. And so he sent this out. He goes, the fourth goal was offside. And I had had enough of parents. And I sent a message back. I go, first of all, that call is tough enough for an NHL linesman, let alone an amateur official.
Yeah.
And second of all, good teams don't complain about the officiating. Like good team. Like I remember when I reffed in Detroit, Scotty Bowman had some of the best teams ever.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he scared the shit out of me because but Scotty didn't say, first of all, he didn't have to say that much. He just had to look at you. But I bring up this point, this the other day, the two coaches that were in the Stanley Cup, the semifinals last year in John Cooper and Barry Trotz.
Yep.
two of the most respectful coaches in the league. I said to Barry Trotz a month before I retired, I went over to the bench. The whole Islander bench is standing there. I said, I would referee you guys 82 games a year. And Matt Martin and Clutterbuck and all these guys are like, and Trotsy goes, Peelsy, why do you say that? I go, you guys, you don't complain about the officiating. Trotsy never does.
Mm-hmm.
His job is to coach the team and the players play. And that's probably a bit of, that's a lot of Barry. And it's a little bit about Lou Lamoriello too. But sure. I said to our team on the group chat, I go, good teams do not complain about the officiating.
Yep.
And that might not really answer your question.
No,
but
I like that line.
But I tell these parents, your kid just made 10 mistakes out there, 15. This kid's 14, 15, 16 years old. Yeah. You expect him to be perfect? Are you kidding me? Why don't you try it?
You know,
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how some of these parents act. And back in September, because this is the first year for the select team that Jamal and I coach, we were at a tournament in Grand Rapids. And I got yelling at the ref. And taking the first 7 penalties. Okay, it was 7-0. So I called him over. I said, I just have one question for you. I go, and he was like in his 30s, you know.
Okay.
Because I would never, ever, you know, I'm trying to improve officiating in St. Louis by teaching the young kids and grabbing kids. And I said to him, all I said was, are you telling me we are the only team out here taking penalties? So you guys will laugh at this. So we had taken a penalty. I called him over. I don't know if he knew me. I don't know, but it was pretty ironic. Literally 5 seconds later, my son, he's got PO on the back, number 20, the number I wore. And he's on the boards and this kid falls down. He calls Bronson, my son, for a penalty. He puts us down 5-3. And I'm like, I'm losing my mind. So I understand. Let me finish this up. I understand why parents get upset.
Yeah, sure.
Because what bothers me is when I see 30 and 40 year old men or 20 year old kids doing a 10U game and they're getting hit by the puck and they're getting in the way, it shows me it's a lack of effort because you shouldn't be getting hit by a 9 or 10-year-old kid. You should be a good enough skater that you can read the play and get out of it. And that's the biggest thing that I try to emphasize with the kids at my camp is that you might be doing a 10U game and you feel you should be doing a AAA game or a squirt game or whatever. But that game means something to those kids.
Sure.
A lot to those kids and to the parents and the coaches. So, and you're getting paid. These kids are like, when I started refereeing back in the 70s, I was 13 years old and I was working at the golf club in the summertime and I was caddying and I was cleaning clubs. And when the winter time rolled around, I missed having the spending money. So my mom and dad were like, hey, you're at the rink all the time. So we lived in a town of 1,000 people and the rink is where everybody went out. And they're like, why don't you ref the 6 and 8 year olds? Because I was 13. And I was getting $5 a game. Well, these kids now in Chesterfield and St. Louis, they're getting $35-$40 a game.
Oh, sure.
Good money for an hour, one hour.
Yeah. So
it's not like they're volunteering their time. They're getting paid very well to do it.
Right.
So all I tell them is I go, just put an effort in. Make it, even if you're not into it, make it look like you're working hard, you know? Yeah.
That's great life advice. If you're not into it, make it look like you're working hard. I mean, they'll get you by in a lot of situations. So, especially for refereeing young kids. Absolutely.
You know, the probably, I don't know. I don't know how many years I started doing it. There was an old linesman. His name was Ray Scampanello and he's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Scampy had this act that when he would pick the puck up on an icing, he would skate faster than Pavel Bure down the ice. Okay? But the perception was to the fans, to the coaches, to the players that he was working hard.
Yeah.
I started doing that 15 years ago, where if there was an icing and I was the front guy where the puck went over the line, I would bust my rear end down to the other end.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Brian Boucher, who works for TNT now, he was the goaltender then for Arizona. And I come busting down the ice and I stop and Boosh looks at me, goes, man, he goes, Pielsa, you're working hard tonight. I go, yeah, I am. And I would do the same thing during the shootout. When the shootout, when the player would take the shot on net, it became a competition with another official because they knew what I was going to do.
Yeah.
I would bust my butt down and I always picked, they would always say, what side do you want? I go, I want the bench side. And they go, nobody ever figured it out.
Yeah.
But the reason I wanted the bench side was because the cameras are on the
other side. Yeah.
On the other side. And they would always catch me skating back.
Nice.
And the players would always go, they'd be like, come on, Bielsa, pick it up. but their perception was that I was working hard.
Yeah.
And it gained me a lot of respect throughout the league because they're like, this guy's coming to work. He's coming to work every night. Like, and it's so funny. It's a little bit of a, you know, being phony, but it's not because it's all perception. And
sure.
And how hard you work on the ice, but because there were some nights I didn't have it. I was, my flights were delayed. I didn't get in time. I had a bad sleep, whatever. I had food. Like I remember a night I worked in Florida, I had food poisoning and I went to lunch that day and I got food poisoning right after lunch. And I was on the toilet the entire afternoon and I got to the rink and I'm on the toilet. And I'm like, okay, like, I mean, we get the trainer to come down. He gives me some Imodium to stop things. Mm-hmm. And I go out and ref the game. And I don't even know if I had a good game, bad game, whatever. But there's nights when our officials are going on the ice because they just can't. They can't go, I'm sick. I don't feel well. Put in the seventh or eighth defenseman or ninth defenseman. He's going to take my spot.
Sure.
Our guys have to go out and work even when they're not feeling good.
Yep. Yep. So we've just got a few more questions for you, Tim. And, you know, you brought up Barry Trotz earlier and, you know, some of the coaches, Scotty Bowman, whoever else. And recently, and I'm pretty sure you're aware of this because I saw you tweet about it earlier, Rod Brind'Amour is fined $25,000 for his conduct after a few late calls went against Carolina. And if you haven't checked him out on Twitter, you should, guys, but just in case, Tim, what are your thoughts on Brind'Amour's fine, where the league stood on that? Did Brind'Amour cross a line? Was that fine merited?
So I have a tremendous amount of respect for Rod Brind'Amour. First of all, he was a tremendous player and you can tell by his team, the players love playing for him. You know, he's the epitome of a player's coach, right? Like because you know he genuinely cares for his players. He loves his players, and you can see how they respond, and they'll go through the wall for him. I don't know the backdrop of why, because I got asked this the other day. Was he warned before about his actions? I don't know if he was warned. All I know is, and you saw my tweet, is he got fined $25,000 for yelling at the refs.
Right.
I know for a fact that the refs did not file a report on that game. They did not complain about it. So this was the league. This was Coley Campbell.
Okay. Sure.
Did they warn him before saying, hey, your outbursts on the bench are out of line. You got to slow it down. I don't know. All that I'm sure the league probably wasn't happy when I sent that tweet out, because all that I meant to say was, let's be careful that we don't take the emotion out of the game.
Yeah, sure.
And
I wasn't calling your tweet out, by the way. I thought it was very well said and gave a lot to think about. That's why I wanted to ask about it.
Because you guys know Brian Boyle. He's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, he's a great guy. And he yelled at me. He was playing for Tampa a couple of years ago. And next shift, he comes out and he goes, Pielsa, I'm sorry. I looked it right at him. I go, don't you ever apologize. I go, don't you ever apologize for getting emotional. I go, we need more emotion in this game. This is what makes our game the best sport in the world. I said, we cannot take the emotion out of the game. And all I said in my tweet was, Rod Brindamore respects the officials. When I refereed him, and I had refereed him as a player, and we had our run-ins, but when he became a coach, it was almost like he gave me a clean slate, and we had times where he disagreed and so on, but I could come over and talk to him and say, Rod, I'm sorry, but you may not like it, but this is a penalty, and you may not like it like this, but this is how I have to deal with the situation. And he was always respectful. And I've seen him in press conferences defend the officials and say, you know what, it's really the league's issue, it's not the officials. He's got a tremendous amount of respect. So I don't know the backstory, and that's
sure.
a question, but I caution that we don't take the emotion out of the game, because that's what makes our game so good.
And fun. It makes it a lot of fun for sure. So absolutely.
So I got the last question here, and I know that it might be a little hard to isolate just one here, but I'm curious, do you have a favorite memory from any game that you've officiated? And if so, what is it?
A couple. That's a good question, Devin. I think the two that stand out to me, obviously, you know, I grew up in New Brunswick, you know, small town. I used to watch, you know, where I grew up in New Brunswick, we had three channels, you know, one was a French channel. And you know, I grew up watching the Olympics, and then being selected to work the Olympics, I was overwhelmed. And I went there and I had some good games, and I got chosen to work the USA Finland game, and to be able to, you know, be working in the Olympics as a kid from New Brunswick that grew up in a trailer park, I'm like, are you serious? Like, can this be really happening? But a funny story to that, because it was in the first period, and ironically, it was Patrick Kane. Patrick Kane once for sure. I think it was Patrick Kane the second time, but I called two penalty shots in favor of the USA team. And Finland's playing, and you know how proud Teemu Selanne is of Finland. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he had ever won a medal, but it meant a lot to them. It didn't mean as much to the U.S. playing mm-hmm. for the bronze as it did mean to Finland. And Teemu came over to me, and he literally was losing his mind on me. And I can't even repeat what he said. Mm-hmm. He was so furious that I'd given the USA two penalty shots. And anyway, the game goes on. And if this was a regular season game, I would have kicked him out, or I would have at least given him an unsportsmanlike penalty. But I'm like, Pielsey, this is on NBC. It's a final game. It's Selanne, the star of Finland. Mm-hmm. You have to suck this up. You cannot take this personal. You cannot give him a penalty. You have to eat his stuff, his work.
Mm-hmm.
So Finland goes on, they win the game. And at the Olympic Village, the hotel that the officials were staying at, it was really one of the only bars in Sochi that stayed open late. So we're all the refs are sitting around, we're drinking, you know, in some Russia. Mm-hmm. That's all we're doing. And all of a sudden here, I see Jarmo Kekalainen, and I love Jarmo. He's GM mm-hmm. of Columbus, and he was the GM of the Finnish team. And Kimmo Tiininen, who was the defenseman that played for the Flyers, and he's a Finnish player, is one of my favorite guys of all time. All of a sudden, I see the whole Finnish team coming into the bar. and Jarmo comes right over and sits right beside me, and Kimmo sits beside me. And we're starting to drink, and now comes Teemu. And Teemu comes in, he goes, Pielsey, I love you. I go, dude, you are the biggest front runner I know. We're on the plane back to North America 2 days later, and his wife is still apologizing to me. So that was a great time. It was just a great memory. I was with, you know, it's funny because in officiating, before we had 32 teams, we would always call ourselves the 32nd team because we're a tight-knit group.
Right.
And I was in the Olympics, and I'm working there with Derek Rommel, the longtime linesman, and Brad Kabachik, and Kelly Sutherland, and guys that, you know, I talked to Derek today. Like I talked to them all. Like you become brothers. You come up through junior hockey together. You work in the NHL for so long together that you just become great friends. So it was that game, and then the last game seven. They haven't played a game seven since, and it was in 2009, I think, or 2010. It was between the Rangers and the Flyers. And it was at Madison Square Garden. And Chris Rooney and I got selected to do the game. And whenever you get picked for game seven, you're really, I could be corny and say you're humbled, but you're pumped up.
Like, sure.
Because because they consider you one of the top referees in the playoffs to work in game seven. Because they're putting what they feel their best referee is in for that game because someone's going home. They want the game to go well. So it was about an hour and a half before the game, and we're in the dressing room. It's Madison Square Garden, and they are chanting, "Let's go Rangers," for an hour and a half before the game. And you come out of that tunnel, and first of all, that's one of the most iconic buildings in the world. And you're coming out of that building, you're going, "This is awesome. This is effing awesome. Like, I'm ready to go. This is fantastic." And then Rooney and I called one penalty. It was against Zach Rinaldo. We gave him an interference penalty. He blew somebody up by the bench. Didn't even have the puck. And that was it. We dropped the puck. We let him play, and it was phenomenal. So things like that kind of stick out.
I got goosebumps even thinking of Madison Square Garden that way. I mean, it's, you know, Tim, what a treat. We cannot thank you enough for coming on. Hope to have you on again on a future show too.
Let's do it again, boys.
Yeah, I mean, I could ask you 100 more questions. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I had
we're to,
have I
was, to bring you back.
I was pinging the boys on the side.
The problem is I talked so long, you guys couldn't ask all your questions. You
know what? That's okay though.
nobody wants to hear us talk. Yeah. They have to deal with that week in and week out. My poor wife, she wished she is a mute button for me, let me tell you.
I would love, you guys are good guys. I'd love to come on your show again. And I congratulations on the success and the followers that you have. And anytime you guys need me to come on, I'd love to come on. So
you be careful saying that, Tim. we'll be calling you in to be our fourth member every week.
I love it. And there are no reviews here. So yes. Whatever call you make, that's it.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
But that is our show. Thank you at home so much for tuning into this super special episode. Don't forget, give us a like, subscribe, comment, share. We'd love to hear from you. Tweet out your questions. We'll get back to answering your questions on the air next week. Follow us on Twitter. Again, follow Tim on Twitter at TimCPeel20. And we will see you again next week. Cheers.